welcome all members of the year and welcome members of the media. I don't want to move from the premise that we generally know each other. Maybe we can take a quick round of introductions as to who is here before we start with our meeting. My name is Bongani Thomas Bongo. I'm the chairperson of the committee. We'll start this way until here. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Edma Tonsi. I'm the committee secretary.
I'm Sai Mamabolo. I'm the chief electoral officer at the commission.
My name is Janet Love. I'm the vice chairperson of the commission.
My name is Nomsa Masugu. I'm one of the commissioners in the electoral commission.
I'm Jabulo Mzuza, Deputy Minister Home Affairs.
Masego Shiburi, I'm the Deputy CEO responsible for the elections program.
Courtney Sampson, Provincial Electoral Officer for the Western Cape.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Lorato Tito, the member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Adrian Ruiz, member of the committee.
Good morning, thank you, Chair. My name is Joe McLua. I'm a member of this committee.
Asnat Malekwe, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Morning, Chair. My name is Musa Chaban, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Tulani Mavuso. I'm the Team Director General of Home Office.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Jackson McKay. I'm the DDG responsible for Immigration Services.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Gordon Hollamby. I'm the CFO at Home Affairs.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. My name is Rika Anker. I'm the Chief Director for Port Control and Home Affairs.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Omar Sakuri. Parliamentary and Communist support.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Senzo Zondi, Parliamentary Officer to Deputy Minister Home Affairs.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Dr. Kawerik Stikavuro. I'm from PMG.
You must sit such that the Chairperson can see you. Let's proceed that way.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson, ADM, Honourable Members. My name is Siya Koza from the Department of Home Affairs, responsible for communications.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nandi Pamakakwana, Committee Assistant to the Committees.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Andy Siya Magina, and I'm a journalist from Sunny Times.
Morning, my name is Tembi Lekole. I'm a journalist at CBS Newspaper.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Haren Naika, and I'm from CASAC.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Musia from SABC.
Good morning. Baba Londenza from EWN.
Adam Salmon, content advisor to the committee.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're welcome once more in the Committee of Home Affairs. We have circulated the agenda. The agenda is as you see it in front of you. And I think of importance and of note is that our meeting is just taking place shortly after there was an incident that involved the refugees and asylum seekers, wherein there was a very serious scuffle between refugees and the law authorities of this country. And we have expressed a view that the United Nations Commission on Refugees must come to the party. We've also expressed a view that the Home Affairs Department must despite the fact that the refugees do not want to meet with the department, but the Home Affairs must try whatever possible in their means to make sure that they get into the picture in terms of resolving, but also the all other stakeholders that are involved who are doing that, because you'll know that South Africa is a country. It has been hailed all over the world as the reservoir of human rights, and we have been advocates of what we call human rights. And part of the reasons why majority of the people want to be refugees in South Africa is because of our standing record in terms of protection of human rights. So we condemn with all contempt deserves that in an attempt to resolve the problem, the refugees find themselves to be now attacking the law authorities of the country. And we feel that all parties that are relevant and that must resolve the problem must come to the pitch to make sure that we speedily deal with this matter. We are aware that the Home Affairs has sent some of the people to Lindela, and some are in custody and so on and so forth. But we are condemning with the strongest terms that in an attempt to resolve the problem, the refugees opt to fight with the police. And we feel that because we are governed by the rule of law in this country, not only the rule of law, but we are signatories to a lot of convention. We are signatories to a lot of convention, and our constitution protects everyone who's here. So it will be important that the rules of engagement are guided by both the constitution and other laws that are there in the country regulating this particular matter. And I thought it would be important to start on that note. I don't know whether we have any apologies. From me, I don't have any apologies.
I have got an apology from Ms. Lekwase, Mr. Lekota, and Mr. Sheikh Imam. And then Ms. Van der Merwe, she said she was going to come back after the 2 minutes. She's going to attend another meeting.
Honorable Deputy Minister?
Thank you, Chair. I thought it is proper for me to indicate that the Minister would have loved to join us, but unfortunately there are Cabinet Committee meetings that are sitting, as well as the JCPS cluster later on. So that is why he is not with us here today. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, I also want to just make an apology for Angel, she's coming late. If it's possible, Chair, I want to respond on the statement that you've made. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, Chairperson, I really would want to say I welcome the decision. There is allegations that most of the refugees don't want Home Affairs involved. But I must also have this register as a Member of Parliament. On the 30th of October, there was a meeting supposed to be held between various clusters where someone had a name as the provincial Home Affairs representative, Yusuf Simon. They did not fulfill their obligation in attending that meeting and give instruction for the police to go on with the detention of 101 refugees. And I must also say that to a great extent, and while we have all the big powers that be in this house, we have to do something with the shortage of immigration officers. I think if we as Home Affairs have deployed the enough immigration officers to deal with these issues, the problem could have been better resolved. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that response. Generally on apologies, but I did grant you indulgence just to respond to the statement we have issued. Do you have any further apologies? None? Commissioner?
Sorry, Chairperson. Commissioner Moyepia is at the moment in the queue waiting.
I think
it's arrived. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Next, Honorable Mashavani.
I thought we can go to the next item, the point that is raised by Honorable McClure. This Home Affairs, I think they'll reflect on it when they come to the agenda. I'm trying to persuade you to consider moving to a second item.
Okay, I do not need a persuasion, but we're already on the second item. Can we take the presentation from over to you? Who's the head of the delegation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to hand over straight away without delay to the CEO. He has an overview of our interpretation of the recommendations, and I think then if there are questions, we can field them amongst the delegation.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair, Chairperson of the Committee, Deputy Minister, Commissioners, my colleagues, and members of the Portfolio Committee. What we will be dealing with this morning is we'll have a little bit of a background, the terms of reference of the Election Task Team, the salient factors that informed the work of the Electoral Task Team, the recommendations, and will make some concluding remarks at the end. The report of the High Level Panel on the Assessment of Key Legislation recommended that Parliament should amend the Electoral Act to provide for an electoral system that makes members of Parliament accountable to defined constituencies on a proportional representation and constituency system for national elections. This recommendation of the High Level Panel is contained on page 526, and it is recommendation number 6.8. But the recommendation extensively references the report of the Electoral Task Team, which was chaired by Mr. Dr. Van Zyl-Slabbert, way back at the beginning of the 2000s. So the nub of the recommendation really is that this Parliament must consider the introduction of an electoral system that has both a constituency element as well as a proportional element. But in the high level panel report, a lot of technical ground is not traversed, but reference is made to the report of the Electoral Task Team. So we're going to be dealing largely, therefore, with the analysis of the report of the Electoral Task Team, because that's what the high-level panel has indicated. Now, the Interim Constitution of the Republic provided for members of the National Assembly and legislatures of the nine provinces to be elected in 1994 by universal adult franchise in accordance with the system of proportional representation. In terms of the electoral testing, the provisions of the final constitution, in other words, the 1996 constitution, did not extend beyond the 99 elections. Thus, the constitution required that an electoral system be introduced through the enactment of national legislation. In pursuance of that, the electoral task team was established by cabinet in 2002. And the key task of the electoral task team was to draft the new electoral legislation as required in terms of the constitution. Now, the terms of reference of the electoral task team are the following: to identify the controlling constitutional parameters which have a bearing on the electoral system, to identify salient and relevant aspects of the South African context, because it is not just the constitutional parameters but contextual issues of a socio-economic and political nature that the task team had to take account in providing a proposed electoral system, and to identify the list of options available within the South African context, to canvass the views and preferences of role players, especially political parties, and discuss with them the options. And lastly, to formulate a draft bill for submission to the Minister of Home Affairs. Now, evidently, the brief of the electoral task team did not extend to amending the constitution. That was outside of their purview. But their role was limited to proposing an electoral system in terms of the extant constitutional provisions. So in doing their work, the electoral task team accepted the following values as being core and as being necessary to underpin any electoral system. And those values are, are as follows: fairness, inclusiveness, simplicity, and accountability. So they said these are the four crucial values against which any electoral system must be measured. Now, if one goes into each one of these, fairness implies that every eligible voter should have the opportunity to vote, and that votes should be of equal value. In other words, every vote has some relevance to the composition of and membership of the national and provincial legislature. And this is basically giving practical expression to the notion of proportionality, resulting in proportionality in general. Inclusiveness implies that every attempt should be made to allow the widest possible degree of participation by various and diverse political preferences in the representative legislature. So, as a value, this inclusiveness meant that there has to be political plurality in the legislatures that emerge, be it in the National Assembly and the nine provincial legislatures, so that an electoral system is not the basis of exclusion, but rather the basis of inclusion and hearing the widest possible political opinion in the legislatures. And then thirdly is simplicity. Simplicity demands that the electoral scheme has to be accessible to practically every voter. It has to be easy to understand and easy to participate in, including how you do results and how those results translate into seats in the respective legislatures. And lastly, is accountability. The electoral task team accepted that an electoral system may encourage, but exclusively cannot ensure accountability to the electorate. In other words, accountability is not just the function of the electoral system. There are other factors that implicate the notion of accountability. An electoral system can go some distance, but it's not a total panacea for accountability within the political system. Now, that said, there was no unanimity in the electoral testing. There were two opinions, rather, or two sets of recommendations that were made. And the electoral testing felt that the country should enjoy the benefits of both schools of thought that emerged within their consideration of the tasks that were given in terms of the terms of reference. There's a one school of thought that said the electoral system should be retained as it was and as it is, and that was the minority position. And the second school of thought provided that a multi-member constituency system with an overall proportionality being restored from a national closed list be introduced, and that was the majority recommendation. So I'll deal with this recommendation 1 in 10, starting with the majority recommendation. And it said, occasion the evolution of the principle of multi-member constituencies, which in their view were already embedded in the current electoral system. And specifically, the majority recommended that a multi-member constituencies, together electing 300 members of the National Assembly, and a compensatory closed list providing 100 members to restore proportionality. Secondly, they propose that 69 constituencies be created throughout the country on the basis of a formula that considers population densities. Now, and I think really this is the heart of the proposal of the majority. That the country ought to be divided into 69 constituencies, and within those 69 constituencies distribute 100 seats. So you'd have to do you'll have to have a quota, and you can decide whether you use a droop system or a head system of creating quotas to determine in the 69, how many multi-members will be in each of the 69 constituencies that are created. I think that's the first implication, practical implication, that you've got to do a distribution using a proportional system of distributing called either hair or droop. Now, those are little technological details we can get into at a later stage. The second issue that the proposal makes is that in determining the constituencies, you have to take into account population densities and not voter densities, because that's another possibility, that's another option that is available for the country, to consider voter densities. However, I think we need to note that currently we're having 44 district councils and 8 metropolitan councils, because one of the recommendations, not the recommendation, but one of the considerations in the electoral system was using those as the nucleus of creating those constituencies, so that you don't have a fundamentally varied geographic spread between local government and national and provincial election in terms of the constituencies. So you've got to use the district councils and the metros as the nucleus around which you build your constituencies. Now, I mean, if Parliament considers this option, this is one of the issues that Parliament has got to consider, whether you're going to use the present district councils and metros as a nucleus. In which case, then the 69 will not prevail anymore, if were that decision to be made. Well, I've made a point here. District council and metros or subdivisions that would constitute constituency boundaries. Constituency boundaries are contained within provincial boundaries. In other words, don't have constituencies that straddle provincial boundaries. You've got to contain them within provincial boundaries. And that makes sense because you still have a provincial election that you must take account of. And lastly, consider expanding the mandate of the Municipal Demarcation Board to include the drafting of constituencies, because there has to be someone who's got a statutory remit to draw the boundaries. And that technical expertise resides in the Municipal Demarcation Board. They are already doing it for local government. So I thought this was a very sensible proposition if this is the route the country is going. Well, now, if you give this mandate to the Municipal Demarcation Board, then I don't think it's a Municipal Demarcation Board. It's a demarcation board, no longer necessarily a Municipal Demarcation Board. It's a demarcation board for the country. The number of representatives to be elected in a constituency may vary depending on the number of voters between 3 and 7. In other words, there are constituencies that would have a minimum of 3 members, and others could have as much as 7. So depending on the population densities in the affected constituencies, there may be between 3 and 7 members within a constituency. So district councils, for instance, a district council in the Northern Cape and a district council in Gauteng, for example, won't have the same number of members. The likelihood is that the district council in the Northern Cape will have the least possible members, and the district council in Gauteng will have possibly maximum, depending on population densities. Now, what that means in practice is that there may be constituencies which are geographically expansive, such as in the Northern Cape, where traveling distances are huge, and there may be constituencies in metros and so on, where the geographic entity itself is small and the traveling distances are accordingly small. So, because of the different population densities, they won't be common size constituencies, you know, across the country. They won't be common size in geographic expanse and topography and all those types of things. So it's a difference that we've got to accept up front if this is the route the country is going. Now, instead, currently, as part of the election of the National Assembly, we're using a national closed party list as well as 9 regional lists. And from the regional list, we elect 200 members, and from the national to national list, we elect another 200. So if this recommendation were to be accepted, it would mean parties would have to submit a national list as well as 69 different lists of candidates in each of the constituencies.
And lastly, but very importantly, the majority recommendation says introduce regional representation in the provincial legislature. However, a lot of detail was not provided as to what mechanisms must be implemented in respect of provincial legislatures. So Parliament has got to be seized with that issue, because you can't have one system for the National Assembly and not have a well-defined system for the election of provincial legislatures. So whatever we do for the national elections, we've got to think of a fundamentally similar system for provincial elections, because it would not make sense to have two varied systems for national as well as provincial. Because if were we to do that, to have two varied and dissimilar system for national and provincial, we're going to confuse the voter, and we're going to lose the value of simplicity in our electoral process. Then this is a very aspirational statement they made, that in the long term the electoral system must evolve to an open list multi-party constituency system. All that says is that over time, when some of us would be on retirement, you could allow the voter to mark people's preferences on the list rather than having it closed, like they do in the DRC and other jurisdictions. But it was just an aspirational statement they made. Now, if we turn to the minority recommendation, which essentially said keep the system as it is, the members of the electoral task team who supported this view said it is best suited to the South African context, in that it ensures the greatest degree of inclusivity and fairness. And they said there's a rational link between the electoral system and the pursuit for de-racialized political landscape, reconciliation, and nation building. And they said that it is the electoral system as it exists is simple enough for the South African context, and it facilitates access and ease of participation for the voter. They argued that it facilitates the greatest participation and representation of political parties, and thus enhances multi-party system of democratic government. And they said the introduction of a multi-member constituency represents a new phenomenon which had hitherto not been presented to the voters. So they felt in a sense that introducing this multi-member constituencies would be a new thing which the voter would not be aware, and it would take obviously a huge campaign, public education campaign, and so on, to get members of the public to understand what are these constituencies, how they function, and what are the accountability modalities that are built into it. Because a constituency on its own is not going to give you accountability. You still have got to build an accountability mechanism, whether is it an office or some way of members, multi-members of parliament who serve that constituency can interact with members of the public. But those are not necessarily matters of the electoral system, they are practicalities that ought to be dealt with. Then they said the introduction of constituencies without properly demarcated and regulated constituencies does not guarantee representational benefits. And I think this is the point that I made earlier, that
the constituency on its own does not in and of itself guarantee you greater accountability. There is still some other supplementary modalities that must be put in place to support the constituency in order to realize greater accountability. But just having a constituency and electing people in a constituency in and of itself is not a panacea for accountability. In conclusion, Vice Chair and Deputy Minister and the Chair of the Committee, the Commission's position is that Parliament, as the representative body of all the people, is eminently placed to determine an electoral system. That decision squarely vests with Parliament. But the Electoral Commission has a natural interest in the policy discussion on the electoral system, as this implicates its statutory mandate. You know, so we have a deep interest in the matter, and we want to be part of the debate, the policy debate for the country. And thirdly, as an election management body, the Electoral Commission is at the disposal of Parliament to make a contribution in the policy debate and the policy direction. And we would offer advice on the technical nuances and implications of whatever electoral system is being contemplated by Parliament. Now, this is important for the country to be aware that an adoption of an electoral system that is fundamentally dissimilar to the present one would have huge financial systems and change management costs for an election management body as well as the political parties. So as we are engaged in the policy debate, let's not lose sight of the fact that there's going to be huge financial systems and change management costs for both the Electoral Commission as well as for political parties. In terms of our business applications, they are currently predicated on the present system, the PR system, be it our candidate nomination system, our result system, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if we were to implement a different system, there would have to be a huge investment in redefining those business applications. And the Commission holds the firm view that an electoral system must be practicable from an electoral administration perspective. An example, if we introduce an electoral system that takes 7 days to count the ballots and do all the complicated seat calculation and so on, we don't think that would be in the best interest of the country. So we still need to maintain our ability to expeditiously give the country results. We've got to have a simple enough system so that every voter, irrespective of their education level, may be able to know how my vote translates eventually into a seat in the legislature by a member of parliament. At the same time, the system has to be simple and acceptable to all electoral stakeholders. And Vice Chair, that is the presentation.
Chairperson, you've had the submission. I don't know whether there are any questions from.
When you finish speaking, and you switch off the mic so that the next speaker can switch it on and sit the tree.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. We wanted to give the overview. I think that there might well be questions. The actual document of the electoral task team, I think, has an indicative map, which maybe, you know, explains also this combination of 69 constituencies into provinces, into a national system. Just, it's not obviously a prescription, but it's just an indicative map, which I think it enables one to track
what the CEO has been sort of outlining as how all of the systems fit together. So our potentially our existing district and metro system fits then into provinces, fits then into national. So I just thought from the point of view of benefiting the members, that could be something that you could look at. But otherwise, for questions.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to give two members to have an impression, but what comes to my mind just immediately, members, is one, the financial implications, two, is that it's not because I'm a slow learner, but I would have appreciated that whatever is being presented is an example of each, because if you speak about a voter, you make an example of Northern Cape, then I get a bit lost, because I actually come from another province. I come from Mpumalanga, so I know how vast Northern Cape is. So I think that it is not giving me the helicopter view of all the provinces and how this the voter one and the other one. So I'm a bit, but I want to give to members to have an impression, ask questions. I'm not able to see you, Honorable Honorable Kanyile. If I'm not able to see you, it's unfair that the chairperson must not see you. So we'll start with Honorable Ross, Honorable Joe, and then Honorable Chaban.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Sorry, I'm behind the pillar of justice over here. Yes, I was going to touch on what the Chair is mentioning. So first of all, in terms of the, we're in an economically constrained environment, and there's potentially opportunities to save here. So if the system were introduced, for example, you mentioned costs, do you have any broad estimate of what those costs would be to implement a system like this? And then secondly, it's been suggested in some circles that it would be beneficial to have a single election across all spheres of government, all levels of government, because what you have at the moment is you have an election, a national election, and then people go from council to parliament, and then there's 27,000 by-elections, there's multiple election weekends and that kind of thing. So I think, the first question is, what is the cost implications of this? And then counter to that, if you had to combine local and national and provincial elections into one set, what would be the potential savings of that? So what I'm getting at is if you had a cost in implementing this and at the same time you combined, what would be the net effect? So I hope that's clear. And then the other element I'm struggling to understand, so you would have 3 to 7 representatives, and I guess they would be local. They would have to live in that constituency. So the question is, what happens if somebody resigns? One or two people resigns. Does somebody come from the party? Do you have a top-up list for each constituency? How does that work? And then finally, if you have 3 to 7 people there, then who is really accountable out of those 3 to 7 people? Do you go to any one of them? Because it seems to be that there'd be some sort of a committee, and you could go to either one. But I'm struggling to understand that element of accountability, because you can go to any one of 7 people there. So you could have it that everyone goes to number one, and number 2 to 7 never get a phone call. So how are they being held accountable? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. From my side, a few open remarks. If you look at the presentation, one interesting factor is the ETT, the task team, the actual task team. And I think this committee know my stance in terms of the how it is constituted. My concern is one do not want to see a referee and a player forming part of this task team. Then it ends with a conclusion where it says that this is the commissioner's view. So, for starters, I would like to know who formed part of the ETT. We would like to know, because we talk about views, minority views and majority views. I'm inquisitive to have those individuals who they are. Then, rightfully said, Chair, as you have indicated, it also lacks supporting documents to make comparisons when we go out here and try and sell this. Then, thirdly, it does not speak to a time frame. I also don't see any example of a ballot paper, you know, what it would look like under the system as proposed. Then also, when you look at the recommendation in terms of legislature, I also does not see the comparison in terms of accountability. How is that going to affect the accountability? Because words have been used that we have to encourage accountability. I think we must enforce rather than encourage, enforce or ensure accountability. Then on page 6, it stated to formulate a draft bill for submission to the Minister of Home Affairs. Perhaps just speak to the time frame there as well and the process and where that currently stands. On page 13, the mentioning has been made about the provinces. Now, there are some noises that, you know, this country needs less provinces. Now, has there been consideration taken into place on the possibility of having less provinces? Then while I'm speaking on that, there were also mentioning made about the demarcation board. Were they involved with the staff team? Because I must say, Chairperson, safe to say that when it comes to the demarcation board and we deal with them, they easily, you know, pass the buck to the IEC. And when you come to the IEC, they easily pass the buck to the demarcation board. On page 14, it also speaks to introduces regional representation in provincial legislature. What are the reasons that there's no detail? I am of the opinion if there's a task team, they should have at least brought detail if they need debate on the issue and why there were no further detail, and especially the fact that it has been mentioned that it will cause confusion as well. Then again, lastly, on a lighter note, Chair, I see IEC is very much in love with their thank you hands at the end of this page.
Honorable Chairman.
No, thanks, Chair. I think I'm covered on some of the issues which were raised. There's only two issues which I think we may need to be assisted by the IEC. Did the IEC establish their own research in line with the recommendation of the panel as to what will be their understanding of the reports and the recommendation from their space, which I think will reflect to the issues that you raised, Chair, the cost implication for running this recommendation that outlined. And I think also because last week we had the demarcation board presentation. What is the position in line with the demarcation board, in line with the recommendation of the panel? Because there's a certain area of work that demarcation board has to respond to the issues. And I think to score that, we've taken a conscious decision that we'll have
a joint session with the IEC and the Demarcation Board, just to flag on some of the issues and to elevate key issues that need alignment. Those are the two areas I wanted us to IEC to speak. Thanks.
Thank you. And thanks for the preciseness today in terms of asking questions. It really shortens our time. I want to give to the IEC for responses, but what I want the IEC to respond to, you know, I think I agree with Honorable McClure that we need supporting documents. There is a lot of information that, but at the same time, we can't have minority and majority, because that confuses. We must have a position, must move from one position so that we know what are we talking about. There is an issue that was brought before court which we challenge. I think Honorable Likwate, who is a member of this committee, is an applicant. How does that relate to this presentation? Because I'm sure the court is going to make its judgment very soon. And what are the surrounding implications around the court judgment vis-a-vis this presentation and the changes? And if you do make such a presentation, does it mean you agree with the arguments that were brought in court about these changes? Just make a reflection for members' comprehension and better understanding. Thank you.
Chair, I'm going to hand over on the questions to the CEO to start, and then there might be other people on the panel. But just one thing that I wanted to emphasize in terms of whether we agree or we disagree with the majority or the minority. I think our starting point, honestly, Chairperson, is that what we're dealing with, whether it's the application that's been made to the Constitutional Court or it's the two positions that are articulated by the task team, what we're dealing with is what is fundamentally a policy decision. And a policy decision is rightly a decision that is made by elected representatives with the mandate of the people, that's yourselves. To the extent that we can support any decision that you are inclined to make, and we, by that we understand that you don't want to commit yourselves until you see detail. But until we get the direction from yourselves as to how you might be inclined to look at something, it becomes very difficult for us to supply you with the details so that you can then say, is this really the way we want to go? So I think we would be very loath to say to you, we think you must do this, because that, I think, is not really what would be in keeping. But we would like to support you. And I think that was why the CEO spent some considerable time to give you both opinions, so that it is clear that there's choice. And we believe, as I said, I just want to repeat, when it comes even to the application that is before the court, we believe that this is a policy decision. We are not opposing your right to determine policy.
Thank you, Commissioner Love. The owner of the report is Cabinet. This report of the electoral task team belongs to Cabinet. Cabinet appointed a task team in 2002, and their members there, it was led by Dr. Francis Lavin, Rai Sivetladi, Zem Titus, Advocate Kakula, S.S. Van der Merwe, Norman Duplessis, Rufus Malaji, Professor Jorgen Eklit, Professor Glenda Fick, Nick Haysom, Dr. William Wilmot James, Dren Mupen, and Tefora Ditapul. So they were appointed by Cabinet, and they did their work and gave Cabinet a report. Now, as far as we are aware, Cabinet has not made a determination as to whether they accept this or the other option. And I think in that neither has Parliament said we are inclined to this or the other way. Hence, the Commission has not wanted to be presumptuous in saying this is the way the country must go and so on and so on. So there are those organs, the executive and the legislature, who must express themselves this or the other way, and the Electoral Commission as a technical elections management body will support those processes. The issue of whether the IEC has done research and so on, it is very easy to overlay the proposition on the new district councils using the new data, population data. So we can avail that just to overlay it and show what the possible implication will be as part of informing the debate that must happen. The timeframes, that we can't deal with the timeframe outside of the necessary political decisions that must be made by the relevant authorities, the executive on the one hand as well as Parliament on the other, because this is those policy decisions must be made and then for the Commission to practicalize them once those decisions are there and made. Now, if there are three members within a constituency or there are seven members, does that foster accountability? I think, again, it's a practical question. That's why I was making the submission that, you know, a constituency in and of itself would not give rise to a more accountable system. You need other supporting modalities around that constituency to have a better chance of having a representational benefit. Now, in that modality that's supporting the you have a constituency office. How often do members of parliament sit in that constituency office? Are there public meetings on a regular basis? What is the complaints mechanism that members of the public have, and what is the allocation system? Because, to think about it, if there are three, one could come from the governing party, one could come from the opposition, one from another party. Now, when a member of the public comes into that office, they may in fact say, no, I don't want to deal with this one, I want to deal with this. They have a choice as well. But you may need to have, within that accountability framework, a system of allocation of complaints and so on. So, at the risk of sounding repetitive, the constituency is not a panacea. In and of itself, it's not a panacea for accountability. You need a supporting modalities around it to make it accountable. The expansion of the mandate, have we dealt with the Municipal Demarcation Board? We have intimated to them that the report references the possible expansion of their mandate to include this aspect. We had a meeting with them yesterday. They did indicate that they had a good session with yourselves last week and that you are anticipating a joint session with us. So they are aware, at least the chair and his delegation yesterday were made aware that the report references the possibility of their mandate being expanded to include this work. Combined elections. The Commission has not dealt with that issue. at a more formal level as to whether what benefits will be realized were the country to have combined elections. I guess members of the commissions, commission are here, and it's something that we can reflect on. But again, those are matters that require policy. Those are matters of national policy. And once there's an inclination to go that route, we are available to look at the practical modalities and what the cost savings will be, or what the increase in cost would be if we were to have a combined election. But it's not a matter that the Commission has specifically considered and dealt with at the moment. Now, the court case that the chairperson of the committee references, yes, we were before the Constitutional Court on the 15th of August for argument. The New Nation Movement has made an application to say the present electoral system is unconstitutional to the extent that it doesn't provide for the doesn't provide for independent candidates in national and provincial elections. About 2 weeks ago, the acting deputy chief justice issued directions to say all parties rather must make written submissions on the question whether section 93 of the constitution to the extent that it confers the right for people to stand for public office, whether that and section 152 which allows for the parliament, for the legislature to determine an electoral system based on party list, whether there's an internal contradiction, 157 subsection 2, whether there's an internal contradiction within the constitution. On the one hand, conferring individual right to stand for public office, and on the other hand, conferring the right on parliament to determine an electoral system based on party list.
CEO, which sections are you referring to? Because 93 speaks about deputy ministers.
No,
19.
19.
19. 19.
And
157.
You see,
Adams here is writing 93.
Oh, sorry, Adam. Sorry, Chair. Yeah,
but 157
yeah. So, Chair, the applicant parties, which is New Nation Movement, AUTA, and a few others, made their submissions on Friday. The Commission is busy finalizing their submissions. We will make those submissions to the Constitutional Court tomorrow. And as you point out, Chair, we believe that the court will eminently make a decision, possibly before the end of the year. And you are correct, Chair, that we've got to measure what comes out of that court case with this process. They cannot be two separate processes at the point, depending on what the court says. The two processes must fuse, and we have one national policy debate dealing with all these elements. Lastly, Chair, Ndatokotawa is not a party in these proceedings that, before the Concord. He had wanted to raise a slightly separate issue, but which implicates the electoral system, and that is a direct election of the president. Now, the proceedings don't deal with that. They deal with whether individuals can contest the elections of national and provincial elections. So it's a slightly a different issue. But I don't think it would hurt for the policy debate to deal with that question if it has to be dealt with. Whether as part of the electoral system, we should have the direct election of a of the president. But I guess he can speak for himself the day when he comes.
Chair, two things. One, they're just two supplementaries, and then I know that there might be some other points from colleagues, especially Dr. Masuku would like to talk about costing issues. The two points that I had wanted to raise in response to the issue of accountability. I think the one point is that no system will guarantee it, whatever the system looks like. So there are a whole lot of other issues that speak to accountability. The second thing is I do think that there are other issues that we could provide some useful information of which deal with the question of accountability. The one, for example, is the issue of accountability sometimes is associated with a closed list versus an open list. So a you heard that was being raised. In other words, people are saying they want to be able to inform political parties of their preference within a list, right, as opposed to being presented with a list. Etc., etc. Now, there's research that has been done and there are experiences in different parts of the world, but that is one of the issues that speaks to accountability that the committee may well want to consider. I think that the second thing in relation to issue of costs that was asked, which we haven't dealt with, I'm going to hand over to Dr. Masuku, just to add some points on that question.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair. To the question about if you had combined elections, what you would have cost savings, I'd just like to flag a thought. It is that cost is not always rand and cents. It is very important to think through what it is that you're solving for. So cost may not come in the form of rents and cents, it may come in something else. So when you think through what it is that you are doing in making that combined, if you go for the combined thing, you will not only be looking at savings in terms of rents and cents, you have to think about something broader. What are you trying to solve for? But I'm sure that when that debate starts happening, we will begin to, as we've offered ourselves, to put on the table different ways of thinking through what are the pros and the cons, and what do you get and what do you have to give up when you think about that particular scenario.
Chair, through you, Lynn, just to ask Commissioner Moyoka to come in. If I could just also, on the issue of the question of costs, just emphasize that there's always going to be a cost in any change of a system that you introduce, however small, because people need to understand it. So there's a huge communication cost. But equally, if you don't change the system, you might not see participation, and that's the kind of different cost that Dr. Masuku was talking about. You might see youth and so on not participating. Commissioner Moyoka?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members, and honourable friends and honourable members in the room. I think there are a number of things arising out of the questions raised that SAI has addressed, some of which I just want to underscore, but others that I want to answer directly from here. But my departing point, Chairperson, is the fact that the Electoral Task Team was established in 2002, issued a report in 2003. That report is now 16 years old. There are a number of changes, even on that map on the screen. We do have a number of things that have changed. Let me give you an example. Matatiele, if you look at that, will be in another province than it is today. Kutong and other places have also changed, Mutse and others. So there are a number of issues that need consideration. I think that is a very important matter.
The population at the time was a certain number. It is now a different number today. There are a number of issues that are at play here. The second very important thing is, in fact, the issue raised by the terms of reference to the electoral tax team. And I think Honorable Mglua raised the issue earlier, and I understood him to perhaps be under the impression that this tax team was something that worked for us and reported to us and so on. It wasn't indeed so, and I hope you are now satisfied that it was a broad issue for which a report had to be submitted to the minister on behalf of cabinet. Now, there were a number of things in the reference, the terms of reference, some of which have not been completed to my knowledge at least. And that includes the fact that today we sit still with the two options that were proposed, because a policy decision still needs to be taken. I think it's one of those outstanding things. The second one was to convert the views and preferences of the role players, especially political parties, on identified options. That is outstanding. And the third one, the very most important one, is the one to formulate a draft bill for submission to the Minister of Home Affairs. If we had been to that point, we would not be having the options we are presenting. It is not our understanding as the Electoral Commission that we need to make a policy decision on your behalf, but we commit to the following, that as persons that are impacted by this report and the implications for yourselves as policymakers, we are indeed at your disposal to indicate to you what the options in essence mean. For example, if we revise that map and we say, given the results of the previous elections of the National Assembly and the provincial legislatures, what would that mean? We're quite happy to do that, and we are in a position to do that, because therein lies the fundamental issue of understanding what any of the systems we consider would put before us. And let me warn that in such an instance, there is, through you, Chairperson, a real possibility that if you apply the same election results, in other words, you say this were the amount of votes obtained by this party and that party and that party, and you put them in those constituencies, you may in fact have a difference of representation. And I think it's a fundamental matter to think about. The last thing that I wanted to raise was that the Commission will indeed and takes great interest in this matter, as our CEO and our Vice Chairperson have indicated. We are dealing with this matter in the Constitutional Court, but we are also concerned that we should not get to the point where policy preferences are made on which the implications would come later. I think it would be best that all the options are placed on the table, and to the extent that we have the information, historic and particularly historic, it would be useful for the decisions to be considered. I want to pause there, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, members. I take it that there's a lot of work that must be done on the presentation. A lot of information must be brought in. And also, it will be interesting to get what the court exactly says, because that will be a force multiplier in terms of improving this this presentation. Yes, indeed, we don't want you to make decisions for us as legislators, but what is important is, because we are practitioners, you must be able to paint a clear picture to us of what is transpiring on the ground and what are the implications. I think that's what the committee would want. I think we would like to thank you very much for this briefing. We're taking the briefing with, let's work on improving it in terms of more information.
like what the commissioner is saying there, this report 2003 and now, the population is something else. Mutsa used to be a cross boundary, it's now in Limpopo. There are different implications on Matatiele and different implications in terms of what the municipal demarcation board has done. So let's improve the report going forward. Maybe we will be able to. Honorable Maglova, you want to?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think I'm happy with the last input. But one must remember, we understand this is a high level panel report. That's the first thing that's important, we understand that. But one must remember, this is the sixth parliament. There are new people here, there are old people, and on the other hand, we have been only been privy to research pertaining to this document. And I make mention about the panel. And you know, my inny-winny, pinny little plate says to me, then they were supposed to sit in front so that we can interrogate them, and we're not sure. I'm not sure whether they were appointed by cabinet in their personal capacity, party capacity, or whatever. But I can orate on my personal view. On my personal view, and yes, there are advantages. It seems that the constituency system is a better system because you represent the constituency and not the party. A case in point is the UDM case against the speaker, where there were conflicts between party and state. And also, it does not speak to the oath and a number of numerous of things. Maybe we should, Chair, towards the end of this year, with this committee Christmas party that you are organizing, we should come together and get the research 16 years back and say, this is what we have. Then we will be able to influence policy. There's no way that we will be able to influence policy with a high-level panel, and it must come from this committee as well. We must also make our inputs as far as this is concerned. But I want to put a specific question for further response as well. The constituency system, there's a lot of blame that also says it will actually, we will have less representatives than the current one, if they can come back to us, not now. They can come back to us also on this one. Thank you, Chair.
No, don't come back now. I've already ruled that let's go and work on the report and improve it. But we have learned a lot. We want to contribute more and want to hear what the court will also have to say. And then we'll take consultations with our people who will also make contributions. And I think we'll come up with the best for the country. And thank you very much for coming. We really appreciate for you to respect the committee of parliament. Now we'll give over to the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs. And you want to have to say something?
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I was just asking if at some point we may be excused or you would like us to stay. We can, now that you're handing over to the Deputy Minister, I was just...
Okay.
Stay is what I'm...
Okay. You may stay for the interest that you may be having on the presentation, but we are done. You can also excuse the meeting if... We have other commitments, but from the seat for presentation purposes, you'll have to give the. I'm afraid to say move.